Good evening, everyone. This is the Pacifica Audit Committee meeting, an open meeting tonight, August 6, 2018, and welcome everyone. We're starting here at 8:34. So I've called the meeting to order. Madam Secretary, will you kindly take the roll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Grace Aaron?
Here.
Adana Kasnaib is here. Elaine Duncan? APFD?
I think Jaime Gomez said she couldn't make it tonight.
Jaime Gomez? KPFK? Julie Hewitt? WPFW?
Here, sorry.
Thank you. Ken Laufer, WBAI.
Here.
Thank you. Adrienne LaViolette, KPFT.
Here.
Darin Roberts, WBAI.
Present.
Aileen Rosen, WPFW.
Present. I am here.
James Pagleton, WBAI.
Here.
Carol Travis, KPFA.
I don't think Carol will make it. I spoke to her earlier, and she was in the middle of 100 things and exhausted.
Sounded like she
wouldn't make it.
Ida Washington, WPFW.
Does someone have a fan blowing into their telephone receiver?
Oh, yeah.
Ken, you got to stop that. Yeah, thank you.
Madam Chair, we have 7 members. We have quorum. Thank you.
I think we've added 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Jamie and Kenneth have joined us since you passed their names. So we have a few more. Okay, so we've done our roll call. Selection of timekeepers.
Madam Chair.
Yes?
Before we go ahead, can we remind KPFK that they need to select one more member, and KPFA need to select 2 LSE members? Can we?
We already sent emails, but. Who sent the email? I'm sorry?
We already sent emails asking for the chair of the KPFK LSE to select one more member from their LSE for the committee, and the KPFA LSE need to select 2 members from their LSE. I mean, the committee is supposed to have full representation from all the states.
Right. When did we send that email out? And did we get any response?
I think that would be better if you send those emails, Madam Chair.
Okay.
This is Jamie for the STAC, or if I can respond for KPFK. Hi. So I did get an email about Dorothy Reich not attending, and I had responded forwarding that email to Dorothy because I thought that there was a problem with her getting the phone number to call in. Dorothy responded that she had not been provided with the phone number for calling in to be part of the meeting, but she has her attendance at the KPFK local station board meetings has also been kind of sporadic, so I can, if you as chair would like me to request a replacement for Dorothy Reich, I can do that.
That would be great, although would the proper procedure be to go through the chair of your LSB? Or?
That would be me.
Oh, you're the chair. Okay, well,
yes.
Chair. All right. Should I send you an email just to make it formal?
Yes.
Okay. So you have 2 representatives, right? You and Grace?
Correct.
So you need one more. Okay. asking for a third rep. Okay. And KPFA, I believe, I don't know what their situation is with their, you know, I forget the guy's name. You know, they've had that case going on for ages where the selection of representatives has been challenged legally. So does anybody have an update on that?
Madam Chair, Adriana?
Yes, Adriana.
Yes, I believe that that is not up to us to make all these discussions. The PNB communicate with the KPFA LSE, and the KPFA LSE is a standing committee of the PNB.
Yes.
I mean, the rest is nothing that we can solve in this, in the audit committee meeting. That's why, I mean, we need to remind them that they need, they should have full representation, because in a case like today, Carol Travis is the only representative from KPFA, and she is not here today, and then nobody can go to KPFA and, you know, and convey to them what is going on.
I understand.
That's the main reason. We need to just send the email, and obviously the PNB was clear enough with them. It's nothing that we need to discuss here.
Right. No, of course, we can't solve that. I just figured that that's why they have no more representatives. Who is the chair of that board? Does anyone know? Okay. I'll do it through the PNB then, I guess. Or else find out who the chair is and copy them. Okay. Can we return to, thank you for that, Adriana, because we should follow up on it. Can we select a timekeeper or two? Who's going to volunteer? Ken Laufer, can you be timekeeper? I don't think you've ever taken that on. Ken Laufer? You're probably
I had my mute on because you don't want to hear my fan. It's very hot.
Right, but when you want to talk, then you unmute yourself.
I have
yourself
to unmute it, yeah. I was the timekeeper once for a PNB meeting.
Oh.
I have to get my timer. You want me to time the items or the people?
I think the items just keep us more or less, you know, where we should be.
All right, let me just get, I can do that. Let me just get my timer. It's in the other room.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Ken will be the timekeeper. All right. Great. Okay, so while he's getting his timer, we can move on, I think. Does anyone wish to make any changes to the agenda, or can we approve it as is? We can always add any items that come up in new business.
I move to approve the agenda, Madam Chair. You can read it for the screen.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
The agenda. Oh, I will read the agenda. All right. So after this approval, we will approve the minutes from the July 16th open meeting. The next point is we'll have a call in from our new auditor, from Scott Mitchell of Rogers and Company. He'll give us some updates on the upcoming deadlines for fiscal year 2017, and he can of course respond to some other questions that we or you or everybody might have. Then we will pass on. I have some information on the retirement fund audit to update us. The next item is just action items and any other new business, and then the selection of the next meeting date. Then we would adjourn to a closed meeting if we need to. I don't know if we will. And that's what I have. So we heard a motion to approve the agenda. Any objections? None heard. we can move on a little bit. I guess I can go into begin discussing the retirement funds audits.
Madam Chair, we need to approve the minutes.
Oh, right. We didn't. I don't know why. I just, my eyes just went right past that. Yes. Okay. Have people had a chance to look at the minutes to know whether they have any changes they'd like to request?
Madam Chair, it's the last minute that I sent with the correction sent by Grace Ann. Thank you.
Right. I'm looking for that. Okay. Can you remind me what that correction was? Just so I don't have to go back into email to look for it.
Basically, I believe that they are grammatical correction that she made in my,
okay,
in my minutes. But, I mean, I need to go through the whole thing. I think that there are 5 corrections.
Okay.
Yeah, grammatical errors.
All right. I would move to approve them, taking into account what we did for the previous month's minutes, which was if you have changes after they've been approved, they can still those changes can still be brought up and introduced if everybody agrees on them later on.
This is James with a point of information.
Hi, James. Yes.
Hi. I'm just curious, in reading those minutes and in the previous minutes, I noticed that we're having a category called arrived late, along with present and absent. And I'm just wondering, at WBAI, we do not do that. I don't know if in PNB committees they do that. So it's just a question.
May I answer, Madam Chair?
Yes, please go ahead, Adriana.
Arrived late means the people, we make a roll call. Because roll call is important to have quorum. What I write, arrive late, AL, is people that arrive after the roll call. It's reflected in the minutes. Thank you.
James again?
Okay.
James again?
Sorry?
I'm asking to be recognized.
James again. Yes, go ahead.
So I'm just curious, is that the practice elsewhere on PNB committees and at PNB meetings? Again, I know that WBI, we don't make a distinction for people who arrive late or arrive before quorum or after quorum. So again, it's just a question.
I would not know. Yes, Serene?
Okay, and at WBAI, it has become a problem since it's impossible to determine when we have quorum because the secretary just mashes everything together. So at one point, you recall, there are actually a couple of sets of minutes that have been rejected for just that reason. So I don't think we should try to bring our practice to the other boards and the other committees.
James again?
You're saying, I'm sorry, let me just clarify. Serene, you're saying that it seems like a worthwhile practice to note arrived late, just to clarify when quorum is reached?
It's important to establish that quorum exists at the beginning of the meeting, so you need to know who was present at roll call. And it does a number of things in addition to that. It means that if, for example, I came into a meeting 20 minutes after you all had made certain decisions, I can't very well be held responsible for something that happened 10 minutes before I joined. I'm marked as arrived late. So, you know, it's a useful practice.
Adriana?
Hang on. James was first.
Yes, I appreciate Serene's explanation of some good reasons for doing it. But again, my question is it done elsewhere in PNB committees? Is it done on the PNB? And again, for good or ill, I know at WBAI meetings we don't do it. And so there's been some criticism for the fact that we don't do it. But I'm just curious what the practice is outside of this committee. At the national
level. Adriana, please go ahead.
Yes. It's very clear for the reason already. that we already, Serene explained and I explained too, why it's important to make the distinction. I don't know what other people do, and we know a lot of practices in some other parts of the foundation that are not the best practices, but this is what the minutes should have, because people that were not in the meeting can read the minutes and understand how the situation was. And according to Robert Rule of Order, the minutes, they are up to the secretary, that is the one that does the minutes, and the members can approve it or not if something is incorrect. But it's very clear that the minutes, the one that does the minutes, is the secretary. And unless something is incorrect, the minutes should stand. Thank you.
Adrian, I have a... Okay, one second. I have a question then. Then it seems like it would make sense to put actually what time someone actually arrived, if they arrived after the meeting started or after quorum was determined. Because otherwise you don't know which things, did they arrive, 15 minutes late or an hour and a half late. Is that what's usually done, Madam Secretary? And also, what about at the PNB meetings, the general PNB meetings? Are those marked down, arrived late when people arrive late?
I'm not that sure. I depend who the secretary is and depend normally how the secretary wants to do it. Sometimes it's been, but there most of the time when people arrive to a meeting, they announce, oh, please, secretary or chair, acknowledge my presence in the meeting.
Right.
And then everybody can hear, in the audio when the people arrive. But it's customary, and it's according to Robert Rule of Orders, that is what governs our foundation when it's not something specifically, prohibited in our bylaws.
Julie, to the staff.
Okay, I think, Adrian, was that you to the staff first?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Thanks. If you're not going to note when the person arrives, then there's really no sense in even noting that they've arrived late. Presumably, we're not going to have a meeting unless we have quorum. And also, if you look at it logically, if someone can join the meeting, be there for roll call, and then drop off 10 minutes later, and you're not noting that. So, there's an ebb and flow, things fluctuate, but unless they're going to note every single time someone comes in and comes out, there's just really no sense. We achieve quorum, we get it, and then people who show up at any time are present, and if they don't show up, then they're not present.
Okay. I can check in with the PNB secretary to see if we've got a specific standing rule of some sort.
We're into the question.
Okay, but first, Julie.
I was simply going to suggest that, I understand the reason to say you established that quorum existed as a function of the roll call, but what about instead of saying arrives late, just say arrived after roll call? Sounds less editorial, that's all.
Okay. It sounds like less scoldy, I guess. Serene, I think you're next. Serene?
Oh, thanks. Can we move on to the business of the day? We have a secretary who takes the role. She takes attendance. Arrived late, there's no blame or fault or indictment. This is just not a very good use of time. I would like us to deal with the business at hand so we can move on with the rest of our lives, please.
Adrian, to the staff.
Adrian, go ahead.
Can I just make a motion to make it arrived after roll call? Because I think that's a good idea.
Sure.
I object.
Ileana? I'd like to speak to you.
Or I would like to say, why don't we take this up again next meeting? Let me check into how it's done according, you know, at the PNB level and see if anybody thinks this is, you know, worth getting into. Can we do that?
Can we approve the minutes pending that?
Madam
sure.
Chairman?
Yes, go ahead, Sri. Sorry, I was taking notes.
You know, there were not a line of people. There was not a line of people signing up to be secretary. We have someone who's willing
right.
to do the work, and we want to invest 10 minutes on whether someone who comes to a meeting late should have arrived late next to them as though there's a penalty attached to that. I just don't think this is a very constructive discussion. I don't see why we would want to spend time checking to see who does what on what committee. Half the committees aren't even convened. I mean, you know, really, can
yeah.
I get on with the work? This is not an issue. Let's not make this an issue.
Adriana? Madam Secretary? Go ahead, Adriana. Adriana,
yes,
then Adrian.
Madam Chair. Yes, Madam Chair. I think that it's very clear, you know, the situation. I believe that if the committee decides that somebody else wants to be the secretary, please, somebody else be the secretary. You can see in my minutes that I put
nobody
in the time. No, Madam Chair, let me finish.
Uh-huh.
You see in my minutes that I even noticed the time, because you can see the time that you spend between one issue and the other. We are already 12 minutes speaking about something that is the purview of the secretary according to Robert Rule of Order. But if somebody disagrees,
okay.
they can be the secretary. And I expect that I think that the only minutes that we don't have are the minutes where I wasn't the secretary. I couldn't be the secretary. Okay?
Okay.
Then if
okay.
somebody else wants to do it, I don't have any problem at all. But
I don't think anybody wants that.
Speaking on something that doesn't make sense, you know, arrive late if you want. In the quota there, I can put arrive late means arriving after quorum. That's the only thing that I think if somebody feels scorned because of that, I can put that. But I think that
okay.
that's it. Thank you.
Understood. Adrian?
What's the difference between arrived after roll call or arrived after quorum was reached? That's fine, but why does it have to turn into now Adrian? And then now Adrian is suddenly threatening to resign because we're
okay. No, don't. Yeah.
I mean.
Okay, I'm gonna rule that we're just gonna not make any changes right now, and I agree that we should just move on. We understand that it's not meant as a pejorative or any kind of scolding. It's just noted. And I will speak to Janet of the PNB and just to see if we want to be consistent with what the PNB does or if there's any reason to be. And let's just move on, okay? Take it up next meeting unless I resolve it before that or send out, you know, an email. But I agree that we've spent enough time. I've got it noted. Okay. I'm going to actually rule that. Okay. So we've only got 2 minutes before Scott Mitchell joins us. And let's see. No, he's not here yet. So I guess I can give a few words about you know, what's going on with the pension audits. Basically, you know, we got a list of questions from Serene on the pensions themselves, and, you know, it was a rather thorough list. Let's see, where is my dog? And I would say that I happened to speak to our guy at NIDA, our financial people, George Walter. I spoke to him and, you know, about a number of things, and also brought up that people were interested in knowing more about the pension audits. And basically, they've been pretty well overwhelmed, not overwhelmed, but, you know, up to capacity with trying to get a trial balance, you know, even a preliminary one for fiscal year 2017, because by August 15th at the latest, we have to file a tax return with the IRS and California and probably a couple of other places. So, you know, they want to, between NIDA and our auditor, they want to get the numbers, you know, as clean as they can. The audit, of course, could have those numbers changing a lot. We don't know yet. And Scott will be able to talk about that more this evening. But I think they've just been really working hard to get up to speed. And so George was saying, could we hold off on asking him anything about the pensions until, you know, after they get a little more stable. Now, I realize that the questions were for the ED, but I thought some of them weren't necessarily appropriate for the ED. They weren't things that he would be able to answer. Some of them were questions that we would expect the actual pension auditors to end up responding to. I see a new phone number in our list. Scott, is that you?
Yes, this is Scott.
Okay, Scott Mitchell of Rogers & Company has joined us. For those of you listening on our stream, Scott is the representative and, I guess, principal, I'm not sure, of our new audit firm, and he's joining us tonight to bring us up to date on what's going on with our most immediate deadlines for fiscal year 2017. And I guess we could also address any questions any of you might have for him. We're glad to have you here, Scott. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely.
This is a timekeeper. I just have a question. Is this timed?
Yes.
And I don't have the schedule in front of me, so I have to know the time for each of these items.
Well, I put 30 minutes, but unless I think, you know, we can be relaxed about it.
Oh, okay.
I don't have anything for a closed meeting, so
right.
I think we have time. I don't know if anybody else does, but I think we'll be okay. Yeah,
okay.
Just, you know, you may not even need to, you know, let us know anything, Ken, but just,
right.
You know, in case we start, in case it gets really late. Anyway.
Right.
Thank you. Okay, so, you know, I've been talking to Scott and George and Tom here and there, you know, like following up on getting the, Ken, I'm sorry, could you mute your mic, please? Thank you.
I thought I did. Maybe I didn't.
Nope, you didn't, because we're here. Thank you. Yeah, because we have the August 15th deadline coming up next week. So Scott and I were talking about it, and I thought it would be a lot easier if he explained things to the rest of the committee than if I tried to grasp everything he said and translate it, you know, through my filter and get it to you. So, Scott, there are, let's see, 10 of us here. That's most of
okay.
the committee. So I guess it doesn't make sense to go around and introduce people you can't see, so that doesn't make sense. But if people do ask questions, don't forget to say your name first. But let's let Scott give a general overview of where we are before we, you know, bring up questions.
Sure.
Is that okay with you, Scott? Okay.
Absolutely. Whatever format you guys want, it's fine with me.
Yeah.
to get, so as Eileen mentioned, she and I have had a couple of conversations in the last couple of days, and just to give everybody an update on where we are with the 990, we received the trial balance from NETA, I believe it was Wednesday late in the day, and I believe they're supposed to be sending us a slightly updated trial balance, I think one that at least captures the functional expense allocations in that. That should be coming fairly soon. We also sent, I guess it's been about a week and a half, probably a week and a half ago, we sent our request list for the 990, and so we've kind of been pushing them to get us that information so that we could certainly have time to pull everything together into the 990, and then what we would typically do would be to circulate a draft of that to the appropriate levels of management or the audit committee, whoever is most appropriate with Pacifica, for their review and approval before it gets submitted. So at this point, I think we traded emails quite a few times today with NETA, and I believe Tom at the national organization's headquarters. And they're still working on several of the items that we're waiting on for that. So we're really kind of pushing them because that is crucial, because without some of the questionnaires and some of the detailed information that answers those questions, we really wouldn't have a complete 990. One of the things, just to kind of in full transparency, one of the things when I talked to the tax principals in our office, and it's probably worth noting that the tax principal who's kind of the lead on your account, she actually lives in Los Angeles, so she's very, very familiar with California and the various regulations and particularly the issue surrounding the Attorney General and the letter that I think you guys have usually sent to them in the last couple of years. But one of the things that I think in full transparency with respect to the 990, George Walter from NETA, I guess, is the trial balance he sent over. I think, you know, obviously they're still going through kind of their due diligence as the consultants to ensure that all the prior period audit adjustments have been posted. I think they're trying to go through, and it's very much appreciated from our perspective, but they're trying to go through and kind of pre-audit so they can feel comfortable with the numbers they send over to us. Well, obviously, because of the timing of the 990, I think they've sent us the trial balance. They've admitted that there may be some adjustments. And I think, you know, in some areas, you know, just in the course of trying to expedite time, they're kind of working with, if you will, an unadjusted trial balance. And so one of the things that Nicole Prince in our office has kind of just wants to be clear everyone understands is that if we're sending an information, we're sending a 990 and filing it with the IRS, and we believe that the numbers could change significantly from what we've originally filed. Worst case scenario, the IRS could deem that not to have been filed timely because of the significant change. Eileen and I talked about that a little bit earlier today, and I think we're both kind of the opinion that that's probably a lesser concern, because I think the IRS is at least, as if we're trying to make an effort to file, you know, as close to accurate as possible. If there are changes that come later, it's probably less of an issue that they would kick it out and deem it as being not filed on time. But I did want to at least kind of make you aware of some of the conversations that have gone on with respect to that. The other topic that I know is sort of a hot topic is this letter that's been sent to the Attorney General, and it has to do with, and I'm not good at quoting all the acts, but there is California legislation that requires that the audited financial statements be filed with an organization that's affiliated with the California Department of Justice, i.e. the Attorney General, within 9 months of the fiscal year end. And if you read that act, and I've shared that link with Eileen, it basically talks that there are, and I think it explicitly states that unlike the 990, there are no extensions with respect to this. So I think there's a little bit of a difference of opinion with Rogers & Company versus your prior audit firm in terms of the value of sending in some of these leniency requests or extension request letters that have happened in the past. because again, the letter of the law is that there are absolutely no extensions granted with respect to this. So the folks in my office, Nicole Prince, again, the tax principal who's located in Los Angeles, as well as the tax principal is located in our Northern Virginia office, both of them are of the same opinion that in the case of communicating with the Department of Justice and the Attorney General's office, the best course of action they believe would be to get the audited financial statements filed whenever time we can, hopefully sooner than later. And then if you feel that it would help, we could certainly send along a letter with the audited financial statements, filing them, basically stating, you know, the reasons for the delay and requesting leniency at that time. They wanted to go on and kind of make us all aware that when you do send communications to the Attorney General's office, they do become public record. And they're really, I think their opinion, to be quite frank, was that when you're sending in letters, and you're going back and forth like maybe has been done in the past saying, hey, we're late and these are the reasons we're late and we hope to have the audited financial statements filed by a certain time, and then you miss that time and then you're sending in another letter. The fact that it's public documents and it's fully available to anybody in the public, that it basically just kind of discredits the, you know, the credibility of the organization. And, you know, quite frankly, probably doesn't add a lot of credibility to the CPA firm involved as well. So I think that was one of the things that they really wanted to caution us in taking that course of action before the audited financial statements are complete. They also said that in California, when they file the 990, which hopefully will be, you know, in the next 9-8 days, that they also file a form, I believe it's an RRF-1, and that gets filed with the affiliated group with the Department of Justice in California. And basically, it would, I think there's a questionnaire on it that specifically asks if the 990 was filed with an audited financial statement. And what we would typically do would be, in this scenario, we would check the box that no, an audited financial statement wasn't available, and we would probably disclose something to the effect that we had just maybe been appointed the auditors, that the audit was underway or that the audit was beginning. And then that's kind of basically the acknowledgement that the audit is underway but not completed. So I think because that form is required to be filed at the same time the 990 is filed, I think it's all the more reason that our tax folks sort of feel like sending a letter to the Attorney General would be somewhat redundant because that form also gets filed with the Attorney General. So that's kind of at least Rogers and Company's perspective with respect to that leniency letter that you guys have done in the past. And then again, as far as the 990 is concerned, we're all kind of queued up to get everything done as quickly as possible, but right now it's just a matter of when I think the folks who are working on the requested items are able to get their arms around everything and get those to us. I've heard some things as like end of day today, which I think is more or less come and gone, but I've also heard that it could be towards the end of the week, which certainly would be cutting things very close. And that's kind of where we are with the more pressing matters of the tax return.
So I've got 2 points to bring up. Thank you so much, Scott. The first one is that with this explanation that Scott had given me, I wrote to Doug Regalia this morning about it, and he answered me. And his opinion is pretty much, well, the opposite of Scott's. And I will read that to you. The second point will be what we think the, negative consequences could be if the Attorney General's office doesn't like what we send or don't send. So first,
okay.
Let me read... Let me read what Doug wrote. He said, filing the RRF-1 with the Protective 990 is the right strategy, and indeed the box for audit will be marked no. This will cause great consternation with the Attorney General's office because this will be the third year in a row that the initial filing was not in compliance. If a nicely worded letter requesting a courtesy extension of, say, 6 months is not included with the paper filing, this will leave the AG office less impressed and perhaps less forgiving. They have the legal right to revoke the exempt status right then and there. Our strategy for the last 2 years was to be preemptive. Our proactive approach played to the fairness aspect and the fact that we understood the requirement to prepare an audited financial statement. I think this approach has been successful. Waiting for the AG office to issue a stern letter regarding noncompliance helps no one, in my humble opinion. So I then, you know, wrote back to thank him, but also to ask, to tell him that we have a copy of that most recent letter that he had sent to the AG. And I know that Sam then answered us and said, you know, they had lost it under a stack of papers or something. And once Doug got back in touch with them, they acted on it right away and granted us the extension. But I don't know about any of you on the committee. I don't remember seeing an actual document from the AG's office. So I was wondering what that extension looked like. And I asked Doug if he had a copy of what was received from them, and I did not hear back from him. So that's where I'm at with that. So, you know, we have two sort of somewhat contradictory opinions as to how to approach things.
Carol for the staff.
Carol, hello, yes. Go ahead, Carol.
Notion that we will be tarnished by the public knowledge of our failure to complete our audits, I think will be, everybody knows we've had trouble completing our audits. It's been a very public in the community that, you know, gives us money. They already know that. And so I don't think it hurts to ask. And even though the letter of the law indicates, I don't see any downside. And the upside of asking and the downside of not asking and doing and triggering the concern that we're not on top of this, could have us lose our nonprofit status, which would be disastrous. So I lean toward asking you if you'd be willing to send the letter with the 990 or and with a letter that also indicates that there's a schedule to have the next one on time. That would make them feel terrific.
Yeah.
Right. I think, you know...
Okay.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Scott.
I just wanted to say, you know, this was one of the things that Eileen and I talked about earlier today, was the fact that while we have seen a copy of the letter that your prior auditor has sent to this organization, we've never seen their response. So, that was something I also shared with our tax principal who's in California and said, you know, for whatever reason, it seems like they've at least been granted leniency and at least implied that you guys were given an extension in the past. But unfortunately, we haven't seen that. So we were kind of left wondering if it's just one of those response letters back from the Attorney General saying, you know, we're in receipt of your letter, thank you, and, you know, kind of like noncommittal. I think one of the things is
that was not my impression, by the way, because there was, I remember when the letter was sent and then The CFO was saying the letter was sent. We haven't heard anything. And
right.
said at some point he said the extension has been granted.
Right.
Right.
Unfortunately, being new to the engagement, we haven't seen that correspondence. So that's something that we were really kind of, I personally was curious to see as to the
There's
actual
probably
response.
A lot of correspondence you'll have trouble finding.
Right, I understand. But, you know, I'm certainly, from my perspective, from the audit perspective, I'm trying, you know, I want to help and work with you guys as best I can. I will tell you that our tax folks are feeling pretty strongly that, given the fact that we were just appointed, they felt like the letter would probably be more meaningful coming from Pacifica, given that, you know, particularly when you look at last year's letters requesting leniency, it talks a lot in detail about some of the trials and tribulations and the issues that you guys have been working through. And, you know, we unfortunately just don't have the relationship and history with the organization to kind of speak directly to that. So that was something else that I think they sort of thought might be the compromise or the happy medium with respect to that. Because this letter does not have to come from a CPA firm. It can come from probably, to be quite honest, probably is more appropriate to come from the organization.
Right. So we could look up something using some of the same language, or most of the same language as the last letter we sent, but have it come from either, I guess, I don't know if it would be from Tom or from the chair of the PNB, or both. So that is an alternative.
The only thing that I would suggest, and this was something yeah. else that Eileen and I talked about earlier today, was I know last year, and I think you guys are in a much better situation now than you were 6 months ago or 9 months ago, particularly given that you've got NETA involved, and they're, you know, I know hitting the ground running. But I think whatever timeline we request for or you request for an extension, I think we really need to make that a realistic timeline and not be in a position that you're having to write back to the Attorney General and request an additional extension. Because it seemed that was maybe the case last year, that happened maybe 2-3 times. And so I think they would probably do a lot for good faith showing that Pacifica has made some tremendous strides if whatever date you put in that letter is it, that we're able to meet or meet the deadline in advance of that requested deadline.
This is right. Serene.
Serene, go ahead.
Okay, so thank you for joining us in the evening. A couple of things. I do recall someone saying last year that they thought the request for an extension would have increased credibility coming from the audit firm, since it wouldn't be an organization saying, oh, don't worry, we're getting to it, but it would be someone who was actually engaged in doing the process, saying, this is where we are, and we believe we can meet deadline X. So I understand if you don't feel the confidence to make that kind of statement at this point, because you simply don't have enough of the data that you'll be needing to work with. A letter from Tom...
Right.
Where he consults with both you and with Nita, who's, you know, doing all the prep work, to propose a date that is workable considering the challenges that they're just realizing they've gotten themselves into.
Right.
And from you, I think, would probably suffice. But, Eileen, I want to urge you to share the correspondence with the committee in real time. Part of the problem we have is that when we look back 6 months from now, folks are going to have to try to remember, well, on what meeting did we discuss and what was actually said? If we have the actual correspondence, we can search our emails. Some of us are better at that than others. But, we actually have a written document that we can all refer to. It should not, just rest all with one person, life stuff happens, right?
Yeah.
So I urge you to share the correspondence with the committee in real time. But yeah, that would be my suggestion. We can make it a motion if needed. I think, I don't know, Carol said a lot of things, but I don't know whether she also suggested Tom. I don't remember how she ended her statement. But I can make a motion if it's needed.
Right, a motion, as we discussed last time, just helps us remember what was decided. Whereas the minutes also do that. I'm sorry, just to be clear, you said the letter could come from Tom, where he would specify that he consulted with Nita and our auditors. Is that what you said, Serene?
Well, his letter could include the fact that he has consulted with both, you know, both of the necessary parties.
Right.
And it can be fashioned after whatever it is we saw last year from Dr. Gallia and company.
Can I make a suggestion that maybe would kind of satisfy everybody's concerns, especially hearing what you just said? Maybe the better compromise would be if you would draft a letter and have, like you said, Tom sign it. It could talk about some of the extenuating circumstances that have gone on in the last 12 months or however long makes sense to include as to why the June 30, the 9-month deadline wasn't met. I certainly would be comfortable to put a letter out there to just basically kind of reinforce and say that, you know, we were engaged to do the audit and tax work, and, you know, I could reference the date of our engagement letter, which clearly is after that deadline has passed, and then kind of allude to the fact that, you know, we're working with you and we're working with Nita to, you know, accomplish the audit by whatever date it is that we all agree to. And then you would sort of have kind of a letter coming from Pacifica explaining the history and what's gone on before we were engaged. And then to your point about credibility, we could certainly have a letter that basically says, yes, we have in fact been engaged. We have an engagement letter dated July of 2018, and we're working with the consultants and with Pacifica to accomplish the audit by, you know, X date. And then I think that maybe that would help kind of add the credibility, but also you would have the credibility from giving it from Pacifica's historical perspective as well.
I understand that you may not want to put out a letter asking that your trustees want to do that.
Carol, can you hear the chair?